excited. And with her also is Ray Daly of Urbana. They're in to talk about the new upcoming Farmland Feast. It's going to be new and exciting this year. And what year is it? How many years has it been?
12.
So we're going to find out what they're bringing to the table this year.
All right.
And the Grooming Lounge.
Are you doing this?
I'm doing it.
I think a guy should do it.
I think I should do it because I have complaints. The Grooming Lounge. It's all about upscale men's grooming products.
I hope you brought your lawnmower, by the way.
And it's not for me. Services and advice. With the holidays rolling in, Grooming Lounge's CEO and founder, Mike Gilman, he's in studio. He's going to talk about gift ideas for literally every type of guy, including my husband, the Beast.
I already got a gift from him.
Yeah? What'd you get?
None of your business.
Oh, okay. Maybe I'll find out later.
It's very private.
There's no such thing as privacy in this marriage.
All right. And at Fabio Maria Trabocchi's Osteria Casa Luca, everything is grounded in the rustic spirit and traditional recipes of Italy's Marche region. And Erin Clark is Casa Luca's chef de cuisine. And she's in with Jefferson Farber, who is a cocktail dude. Yeah, am I right? Okay. And a wine dude to talk holiday dining and cocktails all'italiana.
And delicious.
Tis the season to be chilly, and nothing warms us better than the right kind of hot drinks. And Duane Sylvester, who is our friend and head bartender at the fabulous Bourbon Steak, is in with Taste and Talk of Hot Drinks on the menu of Bourbon Steak. And we're going to talk about some conventional and unconventional spirits for spiking each one of these bad boys, right?
There it is.
All right. Well, let's start.
Well, it could be like the perfect day for a warm drink, given how windy and blustery it is outside, right?
Warm drinks. Drop below the 60s and a nice breeze, and it's time.
Well, that's for the wimps. That's for the wimps. The real men don't mind this weather.
Okay. I mind this weather.
So, Duane, let's start with you. How'd you get behind the bar at besides walking there? What's your 411?
Oh, I got to tell you, I've been making drinks since I was 2 years old, I believe.
You look it.
Teaching and entertaining.
How does the man stand?
Teaching and entertaining. So the bar is where I get paid to do that, and it's been a blessing and a joy.
Well, but why? Why bartending? Why mixology? Why go down that road?
It's the people. It's the people. It's the interaction. It's instant gratification. The difference between the bar and the chef, I mean, we both create, but the chef has to wait for feedback from someone else. The bar, it's one-on-one, face-to-face. You know if they like it, they hate it, they love it, and you can fix it. It's all about the interaction, 100%.
Or if they fall over, they've had too much. Right?
What's that? That never happens.
That never happens.
Well, you've got a pretty hot bar scene, too, at Bourbon Steak. Every time we're in there, the place is jumping.
We've been fortunate. But there is responsibility when it comes to serving alcohol and maintaining that fun environment. Because no matter how much you think you want to drink, no one's a fun drunk.
Well, that sounds so grown up, Duane.
I don't know. I think I'm pretty fun.
Yeah.
It's always fun after the fact.
She is completely sober, and she fell getting out of the car today. So, all right. So, hot drinks. Let's talk about that, because that's not the usual thing that gets ordered at a bar, at Bourbon Steak, or anywhere else. So.
No, people usually wait for the seasons. I mean, that's not true. Everyone drinks coffee. It's a hot drink. And why do you drink coffee? Why do you drink coffee? After a meal, because it's tradition, it's habit, it's, you know, people are addicts. But there's something soothing about a hot drink. Just like while you wash a baby or you feel like you want to take a nap after you take a bath, you raise your body temperature.
I didn't get
Whoa. You raise your body temperature, and as your body temperature lowers,
it's legal,
soothing.
By the way?
Yeah, I think it's okay.
All right, so what's the first one you're going to mess with?
I think that the most popular hot drink out there still is a hot chocolate. So we're going to do a hot chocolate here for you guys today with 100% Valrhona chocolate. We do our own three milk blend. So when you're making hot chocolate, you can't be thinking about calories all the time. Think about think about delicious.
Okay.
And use rich whole milk. Use awesome chocolate. And then heat it and sweeten it as little as you possibly can, just because that gives you the ability to top it off with something like, say, I don't know, a white chocolate chantilly cream.
Look at that.
Oh, look how pretty.
All right.
Well, now, but when you spike it, what do you spike it with?
You know, most people lean towards Frangelico or even green chartreuse for some of the nerdy people out there. Mm-hmm. And those are go-tos. I'm one of those nerds. But
chartreuse gives a really licorice-y taste, right?
More of an herbaceous taste, and it really plays well with the chocolate.
Okay.
But a lot of people don't think, like a nice peaty Islay whiskey, you know, add some smoke to it and just amazing.
Who's taking notes? Anybody taking notes?
All right, well, wait. While Dwayne's working on that, I'm going to move us along because we've got a lot of guests today.
We do. Sorry,
and
Dwayne.
One of our favorite guests, a returning guest, is a fabulous chef and a cookbook author, Aglaia Cremezzi. You've got a culinary school in Greece, and she comes here periodically to drop in at Zaitinia to whip up stuff, and she's in town now to talk about her new book, Mediterranean Vegetarian Feasts. First question, I know you're not a vegetarian.
No.
So why did you decide to focus on vegetarian dishes for your cookbook?
But because, first of all, I'm not a vegetarian, but I mainly eat vegetables. I mean, I spike them with a little meat every now and then, but we basically eat vegetables because that's how I was brought up.
Mm-hmm.
I was brought up in the 60s when there weren't that many. I mean,
were you a hippie?
No. Okay.
He was a hippie.
No, that didn't exist in Greece then.
Oh.
So we were brought up with vegetables. And vegetable cooking, I think that vegetables are so much more flavorful. I was always eating all the things that were cooked with the meat and leaving the meat out usually.
Mm-hmm.
But because meat, I think, gives some flavor to something, to some dishes, but vegetables are the real stars, especially if they are seasonal vegetables like the ones we have here, for example, from the farmer's market.
Right, from the Anyakos.
From Fresh Farm
it's
Market.
It's a love fest, everybody.
Because, I mean, it's a feast, isn't it? I mean, I call my book the Mediterranean Vegetarian Feast, and you call yours a feast.
This is my cue to start tasting things.
Yes. Because actually vegetables are a feast.
They're good for you.
They are good for you. But
yeah, but this is a bonus. Being good for you, it's a bonus. Flavor is the main thing.
Right, of course. I mean, you can't sell it on good for you. No, I mean, there are some people
who
want
that. The woman's a fanatic, I tell you.
Right. No, I don't. No, I'm not a fanatic. I mean, I'm just saying because everybody keeps mentioning the healthy aspect of it. This is a feast. You have to enjoy what you eat. I mean, tell me if you enjoy my Santorini fava, for example,
right,
which is yellow split peas with braised onions and capers.
Well, here, pass it around.
And
well, I already dipped in it.
Okay,
and
so
this is kind of like, this is a very flavorful thing. I mean, it might be good for you. I'm sure it is. But
right.
And let's talk about ancient.
And lots of...
Or if you die, you'll die happy.
Yes, exactly. There you are. So you are now tasting this ancient sweet, which is grains cooked, I mean, wheat berries or farro, cooked, just boiled, and then mixed with nuts and dried fruit and a little sugar, which is, and some pomegranate seeds.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the traditional memorial sweet in Greece. It's called koliva, and the word is ancient. And you find variations all over the Mediterranean.
Okay.
The Turks have something called Noah's pudding or asureh, and then in Israel they cook the grain in milk, and I don't remember how it's called, but it's all over the Mediterranean.
Mm-hmm. So how do you deal with people who, you know, because... When I grew up, it was, you know, meat and potatoes, and some piece of frozen.
Yeah, but you grew up here in the 60s and
not in
Greece. Mm-hmm.
The 60s, thank you very much. I'll take that.
Yeah.
But
he was in his 20s in the 60s.
Okay. Yeah. Well, what do you say to people? How do you deal with the people who go, you know, vegetables? You know.
Well, we don't tell them. When Americans, because we deal with, we do this cooking vacation on the island of Kea. And they come, Americans come. We don't tell them that most of the things that we cook are vegetables. We start preparing them together. They love them. And they love the taste. And then they realize that they eat mainly vegetables.
So it's a stealth cooking school.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like, I mean, we roast some lamb and we have grilled fish
but
and all that.
But do people really ask? I mean, does anybody when they're at your cooking school, where's the meat?
No, they don't. Not only they don't, but this was the reason I did the book, because they were so flabbergasted by things that I considered completely self-evident. I never thought of teaching people how to braise green beans with tomato sauce and tomato. But people said, oh, my God, this is a wonderful dish. Then I had to come up with a recipe because I didn't even consider doing the recipe.
So all these are your recipes?
Oh, yeah. No, these are recipes of my mother and my grandmother and all that.
But
also
recipes.
from friends from all around the Mediterranean. These are the dishes I cook because I have a garden also with my fresh produce from the garden, and they are all seasonal.
Right.
Seasonal.
Wow.
But that's where the farmers market come in, because if there weren't these wonderful fresh farm markets or the farmers markets all over the United States, I couldn't be proposing a book like that.
Right.
Absolutely.
Because it has very little, you see, it relies on the flavor of the vegetables. Mm-hmm. They have to be seasonal, and then you go to the market, you buy the best vegetables, and then you look at the index and you find ways to use them.
Okay.
That's my book.
So as you were putting this together, were there certain vegetables that you didn't like that you're like, all right, I have to do a recipe for this. What am I going to do with it?
No.
You like all of them.
I don't include. This is something that I learned early on when I did my first cookbook, which won me my Julia Child Award, not the James Beard.
They both start with J. I got confused.
doesn't read the information. Don't worry about it.
Actually, it's online, as James Beard.
So it's a mistake. It's a mistake. It's Julia Child. So I got the advice from Paula Walford, who said never include in the book a dish that you wouldn't love to eat. So that's my motto, because I have tons of recipes. So I choose the ones that I would love to eat.
Okay. So for some of those who are just getting into cooking more vegetarian, because people are trying to put smaller pieces of meat on their plate, what are some of the dishes that can really be entree sizes that you would recommend?
The dishes you serve today
are delicious,
yes,
but they're kind of snacky dishes.
Yes, I have quite a lot. Like, for example, this season, I see these wonderful quince here. Mm-hmm. So I have a dish of quince stuffed with wheatberries and gray and walnuts and spices, which is a wonderful entree for vegetarians. And I also, of course, have the vegetarian moussaka, which we called pseudo moussaka in my family, which is a very hearty dish with nice spicing. I have something like what we call the pasticcio with pasta and vegetables, and then potato pies and lots of vegetables that are that vegetable dishes that can make, you know, a meal.
A hearty meal.
Okay, exactly.
All right, we're going to have to take a break for commercial, but very quickly, where can people find the book?
I guess everywhere, in all the markets, you know, online and on supermarkets. And basically at Politics and Prose. Amazon and Politics and Prose also.
Excellent. Awesome. We love local. Yes. This is David and Nikki Nels for Foodie and the Beast. We'll be right back.
Hey, Mom. Why is the sky blue? Why don't animals talk? Why do dogs have wet noses? Why is an 11 pronounced 1T1?
Kids ask a lot of questions.
Why do I have a belly button?
But you don't have to know every answer.
Why is the ocean salty?
Because you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent.
Why are there 50 states?
There are thousands of children in foster care who don't need every question answered.
Why is pizza round?
They just need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
Come to the National Academy of Public Administration annual meeting Thursday, November 13th at the DoubleTree in Crystal City. This year's event, Public Administration 2025, How Will Government Adapt?, brings together federal, state, local, and international leaders to discuss and find solutions to the greatest challenges facing our nation's governments. The event features an impressive array of speakers from across government, including OPM Director Catherine Archuleta, OMB Controller Dave Mader, and officials from executive and legislative branch agencies. For more information or to register, visit napawash.org.
In the small town of Elmira, New York, a boy was born into an all-American family. The odds of him achieving his dream in the fashion industry? 1 in 23 million. The odds of having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 68. I am Tommy Hilfiger, and my family is affected by autism. Learn more at autismspeaks.org/signs. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
This is Mark Amtower. If you're looking for cost-effective and efficient methods for marketing your products or services to the government or to other government contractors, look to LinkedIn. There are over 400,000 members in the D.C. area and more than 92 million nationwide, but only a small percentage actually use it well. I can show you how to leverage LinkedIn in ways that support your marketing, sales, and business development efforts. I do this for large and small companies, and I can do it for you. Drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net.
All right, we're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. We're going to go back to Dwayne Sylvester from Bourbon Steak. Dwayne, the hot chocolate was delicious. What do you got next?
We're going to do a hot apple cider because everyone should make apple cider. You have apple juice or fresh pressed apples. Heat it up, add cinnamon sticks, clove spice, and orange peel. People don't think about orange peel, but orange peel, the oils just really set it off. If you're going to spike this, everyone goes towards bourbon. Everyone goes towards brandy. Why don't you try a nice herbaceous gin in your hot apple cider.
Really?
It's amazing the depth and the complexity that gin will add to your apple.
So what kind of gin would you pick? I mean, there's so many varieties out there these days. What do you like to work with?
I'd go with one of the less junipery gins. The Botanist gin is my go-to.
Okay.
Tanqueray is delicious in all aspects as well.
Mm-hmm.
You can't go wrong. I'd stick with some of the traditional dry style gins, stay away from nothing because
just put it in there.
Everything's a new flavor combination. It just adds depth and complexity. When you're talking about apple cider in particular, mm-hmm. apple juice is a diuretic. So you mix apple juice with alcohol, the burn goes away, just like it were iced tea or cranberry juice.
Wait, are you saying if I drank a spiked apple cider, I'm going to lose weight? Is that what we're telling me?
I'm saying that you will not taste as much of the alcohol. Okay. It's amazing. It's amazing how little apple juice.
Wait a second. How do we go from you just won't taste it to not losing weight? I don't understand what just happened there.
If you drink enough that you don't eat, but that would be a problem.
No. All right. Well, thank you. All right. While you're passing that around, we're going to bring on our next guest.
All right. Ann Yonkers and Ray Daly are here. Ray is the beverage manager at Urbana, correct?
Correct.
And Ann is the co-founder and CEO at Fresh Farm Markets, right?
Yes.
I got it right.
So good to have you back in.
And we're going to talk about the Farmland Feast, which is an annual event. I'm going to bet that most people listening have heard of it. Talk about the origins a little, but I want to. We got enough time to really get a rundown on this year's event because there's a lot going on.
Well, 12 years, always in the fall, always celebrating the harvest. I always think about it as the pre-Thanksgiving Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
We started off in 2002, and we chose Tosca, and at that time we were happy to have local fruits and vegetables. And we loved having a partner with an Italian restaurant where local it was always honored. And then over the years, we moved to the Ritz because it was always a sold-out event. It is a sold-out event again. We do have cocktail tickets, so last year we divided the event into a cocktail party, which is from 6 to 8, and then the full evening is from 6 to 10 with a magnificent dinner. So the amazing thing that's happened at our markets and is mirrored in the Farmland Feast is that basically everything, as I said, we used to be really happy if we had local fruits and vegetables, and it was tough going around and trying to find things and finding the meats and finding things local. Well, now we sort of have this amazing thing where we start off in a cocktail party with all local oysters. We have all local wines. We have local spirits. We have local meats. We have local cheeses, local dairy. And lo and behold, we have local flowers.
Well, I mean, do you think this is kind of chicken and egg-ish? I mean, when you started these farmers markets, the product that was available versus the enormity of the product available today. I mean, do you think it was sort of happening when you were starting the markets and now it's exploded? Like, do you know what I mean? Like, what do you feel your role is in all of this?
No, I feel like it's really been driven a lot our markets are structured to be producer only. So what does that mean? That means that everybody that's the market either grows or makes what they sell for you. And that was recommended to us from the very beginning by the farmers who said, we can't really make a living if we're competing against people that are bringing in food.
Mm-hmm.
So, and our goal as a nonprofit is basically to stimulate the growth of a healthy and thriving local economy, an agricultural economy. And lo and behold, that's what's happened.
Right.
So you create a market, mm-hmm. and then you make it attractive so people want to come, and lo and behold, it generates itself. I mean, it generates enough income that people can reinvest in their farms, and then it generates an interest and an appetite for local food. So really what we've been doing is growing the local Chesapeake Bay food shed.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the evidence.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So let's talk about now with this Farmland Feast. You've incorporated this cocktail reception as a major component. Why? I mean, what's so? Is it just a way to raise more money, or is it a way to include a whole other component of what's going on in the DC restaurant scene?
Well, I think it's the feast accounts for about 25%, 27% of the fresh farm market budget. So that's certainly important, but it's actually a response to a couple of things. We now have so many chefs. We have so many sommeliers. We have so many spirits. We have so much different kind of food, and then we have a younger generation of people that have grown up on local food, and it's really their cause.
Mm-hmm.
So it's nice to have a part of the feast which is less expensive, but which is able to showcase the amazing variety of foods. So that, you know, those are all reasons. So we have at the cocktail level, we have 12 sommeliers that are actually cooking with the dinner, but we have the mixologist and cocktail party chefs, so we have 10 mm-hmm. of those that are actually, I mean, you could eat a full delicious dinner at the cocktail party, but then you know that full delicious dinner is waiting for you.
Right.
In the room, so
well,
you won't.
Just
you
eat
do.
Twice.
Oh, you can eat twice. Yeah.
Well, so Ray, let's talk about what you're doing here this year.
So we're really excited to be part of this really great cause. We're creating a kind of a dessert cocktail or an amaro, if you will, for the conclusion of the meal. So we're doing a house made amaro in house with pumpkin and sweet potato and all sorts of spices and barks and really kind of help aid the digestion.
What kind of barks? What does that mean?
So we use gentian and angelica as bittering agents, so roots, for the amaro. But then we're using, you know, a lot of like those warm kind of winter spices like star anise and clove and cinnamon and kind of get those pumpkin spice flavors, but kind of distill it down, if you will, forgive the pun, into a really beautiful spirit to kind of end things off with.
And have you been to the Farmland Feast before?
No, this
You're
will be my first year. Yeah.
Okay.
Be gentle.
Nothing gentle on this show. So, how do you, or who helps you pull all this together? Because this
I've got a great
idea to this huge thing.
Yes, I know. It's sort of an amazing and overwhelming, absolutely wonderful staff. And Amanda Phillips Mannheim is the principal force there, and then a great committee, and then amazing number of volunteers and staff. So everybody's on deck. We're a tiny little organization, and it's a huge. We'll have 500 people.
And Brian McBride is involved too.
And Brian McBride is our coordinating chef, and this is his second year, and thank goodness for him because he knows everybody, and he calls everybody up and helps us. And really wrangles those chefs for us.
You know, you've got an amazing, I mean, just
the amazing
well,
lineup.
Let's talk also, one of the things the event is really known for is its auction items. You don't have real run-of-the-mill auction items. Some of them are very, very special. What are some of the big pulls this year?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. Even before that, this year we had a huge grant from one of our funders, and that enabled us to invite 40 farmers. So it basically has funded the farmers to come and also to lodge them the night of the event. So that's a big new thing. And the auction items are food-centric, farm-centric. So we have probably 120 items in our silent auction, which is during the cocktail hour. And then the live auction also is very focused on food. So,
well, the shame is, for the listeners, you're sold out.
Yeah, but not for the cocktail reception.
Not of the cocktail.
So they can say, right. Well, how do we get tickets to that?
You go onto our website, freshfarmmarket.org, and you can easily see it says buy tickets now.
All right.
There you go. Super simple.
If you haven't been to one
and,
of these,
and the cue is that they can look and see this picture of a beautiful quince. So look for the quince and
right, and it'll
click
take
on
you
it
right there.
Yeah,
excellent. Thank
right,
you both
guys,
for coming
so
in
much.
Today.
Thank
thanks
you.
For all the beautiful produce.
All now right. We're going to switch to my not favorite subject.
Why?
Well, you know, I mean, I just basically just sort of get my hair cut every now and then and shave my beard. But Mike Gilman's going to convert me. Come on, Mike, sit down at the mic here. Mike,
Mike,
is the
did
CEO.
You bring a big razor? What did you bring with you today? He's all set.
He's the CEO and founder of the Grooming Lounge in Tyson's Corner in the Galleria in downtown in Penn Quarter. And Mike, I guess I'll start off with thing. What's wrong with just sort of a getting the barbershop and the man groomer and a little nail biting to keep everything pretty?
Well, we do that stuff, too.
You bite my nails for me?
I will not bite your nails for
Sounds
you.
Sounds kinky, but let's do it.
But we do all the basics, you know, the haircuts and the shaves. But some guys like to take it a little bit further and get themselves a little more cleaned up
with
that.
Well, what drove the founding of the Grooming Lounge?
I had grown up in the beauty business a bit. My family had run a beauty product distribution business, and while I didn't work there, I you know, screwed up their inventory during the summer and learned about it at the dinner table.
Somebody
and stuff
keep
like
Mike
that.
In the warehouse.
Anyway, before I got married, my wife said, "Your nails are disgusting. You have to go get a manicure." I went. Mm-hmm. I was surrounded by 30 women. And I just remember having my head down the whole time and feeling really sheepish. But I left saying I really did enjoy the manicure, but I would never do it again in that environment.
Mm-hmm.
So I started talking with some of what I consider kind of football watching, beer drinking buddies. And they were saying, yeah, I would do that, but I'd never go in with a pretty girl and get that done.
Right.
And I just kind of thought, hey, if these slobs would be into it and I'd be into it, imagine what a real put-together guy would do and what the products he would want and the services he would want. And that kind of led to the creation of our website, groominglounge.com, and the first Grooming Lounge store in D.C.
And so what are some of these products that you work with? And, we have to take a break in a half. Well, before we take a break, we have 30 seconds. Before we get into the products, let's talk about sort of what you're offering. Give us a sort of feel of the Grooming Lounge.
Sure. We kind of say it's a combination of an old-fashioned barbershop and an upscale country club for guys. Mm-hmm. You know, it's got real dark wood, marble, things like that inside. But
girls are giggling in the background.
Yeah.
Yeah. It sounds nice to me. Actually, our son on his the day before his bar mitzvah, my husband took him to the Grooming Lounge, and he got all Dorothied out.
Yeah.
You know, hair, nails. We did the whole thing.
The ladies went crazy, I heard. Yeah.
All right. We have to take a quick break. When
he
come back.
He was a shade of crimson.
This is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. When we come back, we're going to learn more about the Grooming Lounge.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
Okay, so 5 tacos of cheese and a large soda, that's $10,012. Please drive around.
Wait, 10,000 what?
It's obvious you're buzzed and driving.
I've only had a few. I'm fine.
Yeah, the food's $12, but getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Please drive around. Actually, just park and come in.
Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Come to the National Academy of Public Administration annual meeting Thursday, November 13th at the DoubleTree in Crystal City. This year's event, Public Administration 2025, How Will Government Adapt?, brings together federal, state, local, and international leaders to discuss and find solutions to the greatest challenges facing our nation's governments. The event features an impressive array of speakers from across government, including OPM Director Catherine Archuleta, OMB Controller Dave Mader, and officials from executive and legislative branch agencies. For more information or to register, visit napawash.org.
Every day I wake up at 5 to give Dad his medicine. Every day I wake up at 5 to give Dad his medicine. At 6, I make his breakfast. Every day I wake up at 5 to give Dad his medicine. At 6, I make his breakfast. At 7, I shower. Every day I wake up
at 5. For those caring for a loved one, we hear you. That's why AARP created a community to help us better care for ourselves and the ones we love. Visit aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
All right, we're back on Foodie and the Beast, and we're talking to Mike Gilman, who founded the Grooming Lounge for Men. We kind of talked about the impetus for it. Let's talk about, I mean, it isn't that I've been there. I confess, I'm not a virgin.
There's nothing wrong with it.
But it's not like, you know, once I sort of get my self-showered and get my hair cut and shave and all that. All that grooming stuff to me is like a lot of work. And once you do it, you got to keep doing it. Otherwise, you're a prickly pear everywhere, right? So
for some guys,
come
yes.
on, talk to me, man. So, I mean, women, listen, we won't get too detailed, but there's a lot of grooming that goes on there. But
it's all a full court process all the time. I mean,
right.
I mean,
it sounds
nails,
like this.
No, but, you know, I think men are stepping up to the plate. I mean, you have two grooming lounges. I mean, it's not just nails and hair anymore. There's lots of things that we do to make ourselves look good.
Oh, yeah. Over the last, we've had our grooming lounge in D.C. has been open almost 12 years. Mm-hmm. And we've really seen the evolution of what guys will do or are interested in. You know,
okay, what will they do, Mike? Come on.
Well, the initial guy who was coming in wanted a shave and a haircut, and sometimes they would maybe have a gift certificate for a manicure or maybe a foot treatment. Some people might call it a pedicure, but men feel more comfortable calling it a foot treatment.
Okay.
And those are the same guys who would come in and say, you know, my wife got this for me. I have no idea what I'm getting. You know, here you go, and just shoving the gift certificate across.
Help me out.
But those are the same guys who, when they're leaving, are saying, that was awesome. You know, right. I love that. I'm in a room by myself. It's private. No All one's right. watching me. I'm watching ESPN.
Listen,
and they love it.
Let's talk about the back, the chest, and the nether regions.
Sure.
Because that's a new thing for guys.
That's good for a food show. Let's go.
Yeah, wait a minute.
I don't have a problem with it. Does anybody in here have a problem with that?
I think I got a hair in my teeth. No, I mean, that to me is, it's just, it wasn't what guys were doing when I was sort of coming of age
sure.
and all of that. And I mean, are you seeing like regular dudes coming in and doing that now? Is it only the guys that work out or is it everybody?
It's not just the guys that work out. I mean, we do get a lot of performance type athletes who will come in and get their chest and back and even like their legs waxed.
Mm-hmm.
But around, you know, vacation times or holiday times or during the summer, you'll see every shape and size come in to get a back wax because guys are going.
Why are you looking at me when you say every shape and size?
Well, I was thinking about like the bodybuilders.
Right. very good, Mike.
Thank you.
But they all come in because they're going to have their shirt off in some manner and they, you know, they don't want all that fur on their shoulders and their back.
But you offer so many other treatments. You have tanning, right?
And we don't do tanning.
Oh, you don't? I'm sorry.
You do spray tanning?
Spray tanning. I mean, we do have products.
Oh, you have some tanning solutions. Yeah. That's what I was looking at. And teeth whitening stuff, like you sell things
Absolutely.
For all that. Okay.
All right. So the holidays are, we're there now.
Sure.
And so I know that you've got a ton of things going on for different kinds of guys, the elitist and the pretty boy and the jet setter and the me and all that. Let's talk about some of that and some of your special promotions.
Sure. I think kind of first and foremost, what we do a lot of business with over the holidays is gift certificates. And that's kind of, mm-hmm. it's kind of what I deem as kind of a gift for two people because it's a lot of women getting their significant other a gift card
mm-hmm.
to have him take care of something that they themselves want him to take care of. So
right.
it's kind of killing two birds with one stone. Get him a good haircut.
I just want you to be clear. My wife is not that subtle.
Right.
So
I've asked. He said no. There's nothing I can do about it.
The whole thing.
What are you going to do?
So we do a lot of business with gift certificates, but then mm-hmm. we kind of have something for every price range. We have really high-end razors and shaving brushes and shaving bowls, kind of the classic stuff.
I will say the shave there was such an awesome ritual with the hot time. I mean, it was like the old scene in the old barbershops in the 20s where they, you know, all the conditioners and the hot towels. It was great. I mean, it was a great experience. It was like being babied.
Yeah, we really try to make it an experience because you can certainly shave yourself in the morning if you want, but this is a way that you can just have an amazing experience and get the closest shave you can imagine.
All right, great. All right, well, we want to thank you so much for everything. I know you brought in some products today. Do you want to just tell us quickly what's in the bag?
Sure. I had brought in one is called our Greatest Shave Ever Try Me Kit, which mm-hmm. is kind of everything a guy needs to shave, four Wait. Products from face wash to shave oil to shave cream to an aftershave.
And these are all products that you came up with?
And these are all developed in our shop, Grooming Lounge products.
This,
and then a very special product
very
that
special
you'll both
product.
Enjoy. It's called Super Powder. It's a talcum powder that guys can use all over, but
basically, you open up your pants and pour it in, don't you?
You could do that.
Yeah, okay.
And that's what most people use it for. But you can also put it in your shoes or on the back of your neck. And it,
I'll let him play with
that. Yeah, let us know how it works. Let us know how it works. It's a really good product.
Because I'm pretty close to wearing diapers anyway. Sure. Will it work?
God forbid. Jesus.
Will it work in your diaper?
Yeah.
Sure.
Sure, absolutely.
All right. Let's give everybody your address online and your location.
Sure. You can find all information about our products and our stores at www.groominglounge.com. We've got a store in Washington, D.C., and that's 202-466-8900. and one in Virginia. That is 703-288-0355, and that's in the Tyson's Gallery.
Then all kidding aside, I have been, and it's lots and lots of fun. So go
pamper
yourself.
And maybe you can start for those aging boomers, you know, sort of a diaper service thing.
Absolutely.
Or something like that. I don't know.
Yes.
Maybe you can figure that one out, because I won't be doing it. So anyway, all right, what are we doing next? Because we are so
I just
off
got
track.
A visual on that.
Oh, my God. Thanks,
I don't know.
Mike.
I dropped
thank
my
so
script.
Much.
What's next?
Thanks, all right. Mike. Thank you, Mike. All right, Aaron, come on up to the plate.
Aaron Clark is the chef de cuisine at Casa Luca, Fabio and Maria Trabocchi's osteria, named after their son, Luca.
That's correct.
The eponymously named Casa Luca.
Oh, yes. Luca.
And she's in with Jefferson Farber, who's got all kinds of wine things to tell us about and booze things to tell us about. Let's start with you, Aaron, because you're you're running the show at a restaurant in a largely male-dominated arena still.
Really?
What's that like, man?
I don't know. I didn't realize this was the situation.
That is the situation.
I don't know. I've been doing this for about 12 years now. So, you know, I think the novelty of the male-female thing has kind of worn off at this point.
Well, not in D.C. There's not a lot of women behind the
Well,
behind
at the end of the day, you really just have to get the job done, you know? So I guess if you can do it and you're a man, that's great. And I guess if you can do it and you're a woman, that's great, too.
Well, how'd you end up there? What were you were not, you didn't start out to be a chef.
No, I actually went to school for financial risk. I majored in finance with a specialty in risk management. And then did a second degree in English literature.
Okay. So
this
how'd
is
you
somebody
want...
who didn't want to go to work.
Right.
No, I know. I just started off doing that. And then I started to have, like, urges, you know, while I was in college to really cook. I come from a family who cooks a lot. And, you know, I'd studied French in high school, and I was really, really considering going abroad. And by the time I graduated college, that sort of I had that revelation that it was time. It was time. So I'd taken odd jobs in between, basically in the service industry. And then I left after college immediately and went and studied in France for a year and worked. And the rest is history.
But how'd you wind up with Fabio?
So I was in the city and I was working. And I don't know. This is so long ago. This is over a decade ago. But I was working at the Ritz-Carlton, and I was getting ready to go to France. And so at the time, Maestro, I don't know if anybody knows about Maestro, but Maestro
yeah,
was...
Yeah, we're
in D.C. Yes, yes. So Maestro was a chef's restaurant back then, and I was in the Ritz-Carlton, and I started working there. I was cracking lobsters, about 100 lobsters a day for him back when I was really, really young. And, you know, I left. I ended up going to France, and I came back to visit him. And like I said, the rest is history. I've been working for the man for over 12 years now. So
did you
off
follow
and on.
Him up to New York?
Yep, I was working with him at Fiamma. I stayed up in New York. I was doing some other things, and he gave me a call. And he said, do you want to come open up a restaurant with me? And it's based on basically kind of what he had written about it in his cookbook. And I tell this story all the time, but he wrote that cookbook back when we were at Maestro. And if anybody knows, Maestro was ultra, ultra fine dining. And so we were doing, you know, a lot of, you know, sort of aggressive technique. And he wrote this book, and it was all about home cooking. And
well, it was the market.
Right.
It was from where he grew
exactly.
up.
Exactly. And so we were all out of our element. We had no idea what we were doing. And he was on this book tour, and we were doing all these recipes. And I just fell in love with this kind of cooking. I mean, this is soul food. And this is really interesting because it's soul food from Italy, and especially where he's from. And so, you know, I just, when he said this is what we're going to be doing, I was super excited about the project.
So you didn't get to go over to La Marque and do some research, a little R&D?
We're still trying to get that.
Okay.
we're still trying to have that happen.
Are you listening, Fabio?
Yes.
All right, so let's talk about the holidays, because we have a history with Italy and the holidays and all of that. And it's a great time, except for the boiled meats.
Bolita misto?
Oh, man.
No. Really?
Can't get my head around it.
Oh, man.
But the rest of it is awesome. And what have you got? Tell us what you've got planned on the menu.
So Thanksgiving is actually my favorite holiday. It's the kind of the first of the trifecta. And, you know, basically everybody's still being nice at that point. So I love Thanksgiving, and I love that it's all about the food. And obviously Thanksgiving is not a traditional holiday in Italy. However, you know, we talked about this a little bit, is that it really mimics just a typical Sunday lunch, right? You know, you start early in the morning, you start cooking. And as I think all Americans realize, it's what we have to start doing on Thanksgiving, you know, so we do it once a year, whereas they do it every Sunday. So it is definitely my favorite holiday, and I am really, really excited, you know, about doing this. So I brought in a couple of things. I roasted, there was a rumor that I roasted a whole turkey.
Look at this.
But I just roasted a half a turkey.
Where's Nikki's half?
And then we did cardoons and bechamel. Mm-hmm. I don't know if anybody knows what cardoons are. We don't really eat it that much in the United States, but it's basically like a, it's in the same family as artichoke. It's like a thistle. Everybody knows what a thistle is.
Really, are they like sunchokes?
No, kind of. It's in the thistle family.
Wait, so. Anne, get up to a mic. Tell us exactly what they are. If anybody's going to tell
We have cardoons at the market, and it is a thistle. It's related to the artichoke.
Yeah.
Okay.
But you don't eat the globe. You eat the leaf.
Yeah. It looks very similar to celery if you see it. But it's a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful vegetable, and you know it really goes great with bechamel. So
okay, great.
This is kind of all comfort food. Mm-hmm. Are you eating this? Do you like this?
Yes, he
You're not
everything.
Saying anything.
I can't talk.
Okay. I'm just making sure.
Makes Nikki happy.
And then turkey is not really like, you know, that's such an American thing. But I love turkey. I love the whole tradition of roasting the whole bird. I love getting out. I know I didn't bring the whole thing today. I just didn't have room.
Please. Are you kidding?
But we stuffed it basically with breadcrumbs that are seasoned with lovage. Mm-hmm. And lovage is just a favorite sort of herb. It's an herb.
Right.
But it tastes kind of like a... you know, trumped up celery. It just is like has a really nice herbaceous flavor. So I think when you're eating rich,
but
it's nice
lovage
to have...
really, is that a big herb over in the La Marque region? Or is this something that you work with because it's locally available?
Yeah, but I've actually started with I have an Amish purveyor up in Pennsylvania and they grow it and I absolutely adore it. So I've been using it. But really it's just kind of like we bring in, like Italian techniques and Italian ingredients, you know, kind of mixed with what we have locally as well, too. So.
Okay, we have to take a quick break. Okay. When we come back, you're finally going to get to talk, Jefferson. You're going to get to say something. We'll bring you to the table. This is David and Nikki Nellis from Foodie and the Beast. We'll be right back.
This is Mark Amtower. If you're looking for cost-effective and efficient methods for marketing your products or services to the government or to other government contractors, look to LinkedIn. There are over 400,000 members in the D.C. area and more than 92 million nationwide, but only a small percentage actually use it well. I can show you how to leverage LinkedIn in ways that support your marketing, sales, and business development efforts. I do this for large and small companies, and I can do it for you. Drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net.
Green light. Hey, girl. School zone. I'm getting hungry. Car changing lanes. You want to meet me for pizza? Stop sign. Intersection clear. Yeah, street. Pizza sounds good. Ball in street? Girl in street!
It's hard to concentrate on two things at once, like texting and driving. Stop the text, stop the wrecks. How will you stop texting and driving? Tell us at stoptextstoprex.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
The traditional light bulb, a groundbreaking invention in 1879. It's time we switched to longer-lasting Energy Star light bulbs. They're more efficient than the old bulbs, like a text message is more efficient than a carrier pigeon. And they cut down on our energy costs. Because in our own groundbreaking age, we deserve a light bulb that saves us some cash. Saving energy saves you money. Learn more at energysavers.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Ad Council.
We are back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. Aaron Clark, who is the chef de cuisine at Casa Luca, is here. And we are
carving
up a turkey. She brought in one of the most gorgeous dishes that has ever showed up on this show. This is beautiful.
It is.
And it's right in front of me, and I just drooled on it. So,
so none for you.
So talk about some of the... Well, let's get... You know what? Jefferson.
Jefferson.
Jefferson, yes. Farber is the... I don't know what your official title is.
Kasaluka?
I am a bartender.
He's a bartender and an actor, I hear, too.
Food down.
I am an actor,
and a thespian. All right, so acting. So what goes with holiday eating at Kasaluka?
Well, as we heard earlier on the program, Amaros are really big, and we have quite a selection at the restaurant. And
because Amaros are digestive.
They are. An Italian digestif. People have been macerating wines for thousands of years, but these come out of basically vermouth. The end of the Renaissance, going into like the 1700s and things like that, every village, town in Italy had their own recipe of different barks and herbs and things like that they would distill these wines with. And then you add a little bit of sugar and they're at the end of the meal. They get the gastric juices flowing. It's a really nice, we've heard a couple times also, like making things an event. And it's a nice way to cap off a meal.
So which are the ones that you brought today?
I brought three different kinds. There's a few different classifications of Amaro. They light, medium, Fernet, and then Alpino.
Fernet is very hot.
There's
a lot of chefs like the Fernet.
Yeah, it's Fernet Branca is a big deal everywhere. I first heard about it when I lived in San Francisco. I would walk into bars and people would be ordering it all the time. And I was like, what is this Fernet? And but I brought Amaro Nonino, the Nardini Bassano, and the Varnelli Erborizza. And they range. The Amaro Nonino is going to be the lightest. It's probably more sweet than bitter.
Okay.
But it is still a little bit bitter. The Nardini is right in the middle. It's got a great balance of bitter and sweet. It's a complex flavor. And then the Varnelli comes from La Marche, which is Fabio's home region, and it's his favorite Amaro. It is very bitter, and it has a very long, long finish. But
do you serve it? Do you serve it on the rocks? Do you just serve it straight up in a little glass? Like how?
I prefer them straight up, but a lot of people do it on the rocks. On the rocks with a splash of soda, something like that. They've actually even now become like a really big thing to mix into cocktails. And we, throughout the year that we've been open, we've had a few cocktails that feature Amaros.
Okay.
Because they are so flavorful and you can add just a little bit and it adds so much flavor.
So just give us an example of a cocktail you're making it happen in.
Well, last winter we did one called the Solstizio. It was blood orange and Chinar, which is an artichoke-based Amaro. And it was just and a little bit of honey.
Sounds delicious.
Great.
Okay, good.
Perfect winter.
All right, before we wrap up with you guys, Erin, you made a dessert as well. Can you tell us what you brought in today?
Well, I actually can't take credit for this, but our pastry chef, who's actually from Rome, Claudia, she did this for us. It's kind of a little bit of a twist on the tiramisu, but we used pumpkin instead of coffee. So we have some huckleberry compote, a pumpkin genoise, and then a mascarpone crema. And then we just topped it off with just fresh seasonal fruit. I got some grapes in there, some figs, just all really beautiful fruit.
Just something simple you could whip up
at home. No, really? You could, seriously?
Sure, you could, Erin.
This is easier than making a pie. There's no crust.
I
actually really wanted to say that you could totally do this.
All right, so tell us what Kasaluka is and how to find you guys online.
We're at 1099 New York Avenue on the corner of New York and 11th.
Across the street from the new city center development.
That's correct.
Tough spot.
Exactly.
And online.
www.kasalukadc.com.
Okay.
Great.
Awesome,
thanks, guys.
Thank you
so much.
Let's go back to Dwayne Sylvester. Dwayne, you are the finale of the show.
Well, we're going to do something. We do a modern take on a traditional hot buttered rum or a hot buttered yum, because you can do this one. You can do it our way, non-alcoholic and alcoholic.
Okay.
What we do is we take butter, we start with butter and we brown it. So put it in a pan, let all the milk solids fall out and they turn brown in the pan. Once it goes brown, we fry up spices in that. Then we're going to add water and sugar.
What kind of spices? What are we, just cloves? Like, what are you talking about?
But we go clove, allspice, cinnamon. We also put ginger in there.
Okay.
And get that browned and fried up really nice. The place smells like Christmas or the holidays.
Right.
And
offense taken.
You add your water and add your sugar. So you're really making this rich broth. And we put a little salt in there too. And then we take the whole thing off and we put that in the refrigerator. And what happens is that the butter solidifies the solids. So then you can remove all of the butter and you have this butter flavored sweetened broth. It's a technique called fat washing for the nerds out there. But so now we have this tea.
I do that every day in the shower. So that's not nerdy. That's just being clean.
And you can warm this up and then add alcohol to it. This one we do stick with rum, but it could work with scotch or anything else that you wanted to put in there.
Mm-hmm. So you make like a tea, really.
Essentially,
like,
what we're doing is making a tea. We made the same components of the traditional hot buttered rum, mm-hmm. but then we removed all the fat. And it tasted great, but it was missing something. So what did we do? We topped it with a dulce de leche whipped cream. And it is just, it's all kinds of amazing. I'm going to send this over.
Okay. It's beautiful. Well, so let's talk about at Bourbon Steak. You guys have this beautiful patio with fire pits. How long is that going to stay open?
As long as it possibly can. We are into November. The patio is still open. We have heat lamps and four beautiful fire pits. Mm-hmm. As long as people want to be outside, we should be open.
Okay.
Should be open.
So you'll have blankets and things like that?
We have camisole shawls. Mm-hmm. The heat lamps work. We try to make everyone comfortable. We are still the Four Seasons. We are still Bourbon Steak. So if you're uncomfortable, you're not enjoying your time, and it's all about the experience.
Great. Now let's talk. We have a couple more minutes. Let's just talk about some of the other hot drinks. Like the hot toddy, everybody sort of talks about. How do you make the best hot toddy?
The best, again, hot toddy, your grandmother's hot toddy was probably the best ever. And it's your choice.
My grandmother did not make me a hot toddy, so let's pretend ever.
You poor, deprived child. Hot water, spirit, and sugar. It's really just a hot cocktail. Some people are adding bitter. Some people are adding...
sugar instead of honey.
Well, you can use sugar. You can honey sweetener.
Sweetener.
Let's say
okay.
Sweetener.
Okay.
Some people are adding citrus to their toddies. Mm-hmm. As far as you go back, the most traditional toddies you'll find, literally you'd find... punch in an inn, you would check in and they would have something, a beverage they were serving, and they would serve it hot or cold. If it was kept cold, if you wanted it hot, they pulled a iron out of the fire, stuck it in the glass, and gave it to you. It was a toddy, it was a flip, it was whatever you wanted to call it. But just, it's become such a broad category that hot toddy is what you want. How do I make my toddies?
Yes.
I use brandy,
okay,
sugar, tea instead of water.
What kind of tea?
I like Earl Grey tea, but okay. Green tea works. Green tea is a great base for toddies. And then a lemon twist. And I usually stud the twist with cloves or some.
Oh, like you did with the orange.
Like with
one
the
today.
Orange on your.
That's such a good
slider.
Idea. I like that.
Listen, a hot toddy is the best cure for a fever ever. It really is.
A fever?
It will knocks make you out, feel you better. We don't know if it cures the illness, but it will make you feel better.
Okay.
Well, I'm not a medical man, so.
I'm just the daughter of a doctor, so.
All right,
so
that's kind of our
We're
show.
Done, I
just
know.
Be sure to go in when you go to the bar at Bourbon Steak. Ask for Dwayne because he is a cool guy. He's the tallest guy there, right? There's nobody taller.
Not anymore.
Than you. No,
not anymore.
Second tallest guy there. But that is a great bar and a great bar scene. All right, so listen, everything that you guys out there heard on the show today. And a lot more is going on in, across the region, particularly for the holiday season. So go to the listareyouonit.com, Nikki's website. It's free to subscribe. Listen to her on WTOP 103.5 FM every day at at 12:50.
Thursday at 12:10.
At 12:10 and follow her on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Is that it?
That's about it.
Oh, and listen, go to Realm Network. .com to listen to all our shows. They're all archived up there, too.
Absolutely. Next week, we also have an incredible show. Food and Friends are coming back in. It's a big charity that we support. It's pie season for them. And Todd English, you may know him. He's a celeb chef. He's going to be in studio. And Dory Greenspan's got a fabulous new baking book, and we're going to be talking to her about it. So we want to thank all of our guests. We have such a full studio full of food and love and feeling good today. So thank you, everybody, for coming in today and joining us on Foodie and the Beast.
Yay.
And everybody, please have a delicious week.